Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we'll go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score which would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats, football history and its memorabilia at the Gridiron Greats Publishing and Broadcasting Network, in conjunction with Slick Enterprises. We're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. And I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 140-plus years of football history and memorabilia, and you can find us on the web at www.gridirongreatsmagazine.com. We're sponsored in part by MSB Sports Cards. Check out their website for one of the largest selections of vintage football cards and memorabilia at MSBSportsCards.com. And we're also sponsored in part by BST Auctions. Check out their website at BSTAuctions.com. It's at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host, who is a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Larkin. He hails from Portland, Oregon. Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show tonight.
Good afternoon, Captain. Happy to be here, sir.
I'm doing well. How are you, Joe?
Doing good. It's cold and beautiful here in Portland, Oregon. Yeah, it's beautiful. I like these crisp fall days, you know.
You had a rough day on the field though yesterday.
Yeah, exactly.
Seahawks.
Well, yeah, I think anyone Seahawks. Bumping into the Rams nowadays is are not doing good. You know, there's some quiet teams out there doing really well. You know, the Saints, the Rams, the Kansas City Chiefs. Oddly enough, I mean. Just some kind of shockers.
It's very interesting to see that anyone at any time could win on a Sunday or on a Thursday or on a Monday. And we're seeing a lot of different teams now, and I agree with you. It's pretty exciting to see who's winning and who's losing right now. It's amazing.
Amazing. Speaking of, big lineup this Thursday on Thursday Night NFL. Seattle Seahawks face their evil arch nemesis, the evil Green Bay Packers, right in the town, throwing a little house party at my house, a Seahawk rooting party.
I should fly out and crash it.
Well, Bob, we have a spare room, sir, if you ever need. So.
I'll have to fly home Friday morning and get back to reality.
I love it.
But anyways,
I'll start texting you during the game. When the Seahawks get up 35-7, I'll start texting you.
I don't know. The Packers actually came to life on Sunday. They actually played football again. So even though it was against the Dolphins, they still actually showed some signs of life again. So that was good.
You know what's funny?
Good. But anyways.
How many games a week do you watch for football? I mean, because I'm a huge football fan, but it's a lot of history of the game. I might watch one game a week.
I watch usually. Saturdays, I usually try to get in 2 to 3 college games, but I'm flipping back and forth mostly. And I have on my computer my live score feed. And again, I'm not only Division One. You know, I look at Division Two and Division Three teams. And then usually on a Sunday, I'll just go. A Sunday, I'll just go with whatever the network games are, and I'll flip back and forth. Mostly here in New England, obviously, we see the Patriots, the Jets, and the Giants forever. And then usually the later game, if none of them are playing, we'll see the nationwide game. So it's basically what it, you know, it's what I basically watch for, 55 plus years now. So it just hasn't changed much. But
there's a lot of collectors I know who are collectors of football memorabilia, but don't really watch football. And I've always found that to be an odd, kind of odd. But I totally get it.
I know a lot of people like that. But that at the same time, I do watch it for entertainment. I try to watch it to see if I can learn anything different, if I see anything different, you know, different plays, different strategies or whatever. And I always say football is a big chess match out there, you know, and I'd love seeing something different. But unfortunately, you don't see a lot different. You know, you see the same formation, same plays, very minor variations, and that's it. But anyways, let's get right into the heart of things here tonight. We're going to do a little background talk on a couple of things. We're going to talk briefly about the results of the recent BST auction, and we're going to talk about some items in the new Heritage auction. So why don't we start first looking at the Heritage auction, and then we'll back into the BST auction.
Perfect, just Heritage. I mean, just you know, Heritage usually is good to grab a few really good marquee items. This auction coming up that I think ends in like 3 days has a really good swath of 1948 Leaf cards that are available, PSA 7 and 8, pretty high quality. And what I really like about this is I'd say about half the cards don't look trimmed to me. As you know, the 48 Leaf set is pretty near and dear to my heart. I wrote an article for Gridiron a couple years ago about the ongoing relationship between card doctors and the 48 Leaf set. You know, that was kind of an eye-opener to a lot of collectors. So, I mean, I tend to not look at the flips. I mean, I'm regardless of the grade, I'm looking at the card, and, you know, you do it enough, and you can kind of go, yeah, that's trimmed. That one slipped by the goalie, you know, by the graders. But some really good-looking cards in this one. And I'd say my favorite card out of the group is a PSA Sammy Baugh 48 Leaf that looks just outstanding. Just a good-looking card.
Yeah, I saw
it. And that Baugh card is trimmed.
Yeah, I saw that card. That is a nice card. I thought of you immediately on it. And again, I am not as up on the trimming as you are. And when I first looked at that auction, I said to myself, "Geez, how many of these are trimmed? How many of these are short? How many of these are too big? So on and so forth."
Yeah.
And I always go back
looking
at my 48 and 49 Leaf set, and they're every which way. But I know I don't have anything graded. So I know I got some rough cuts in that type of thing. So it's interesting to see. What else do they have besides
a really good-looking PSA Johnny Lujack. One of my favorite cards in the set, the Charlie Choo Choo Justice card. I just love that card, just the way his pose is. And just a really good-looking PSA 8 Choo Choo Justice. One of my favorite nicknames in the Leaf set, Choo Choo. I always wondered how he got that.
It's an iconic nickname.
I mean, and there's some normal nicknames. Dave, Dad, Templeton. I mean, I'm like, God, who wants to be called Dad in the locker room? That seemed a little weird. George Connor, PSA 8 that looks good. Again, the Connor, any Hall of Fame rookie cards in that 4-day leaf set are just very, you know, subject to trim, you know, just because they're such high-dollar cards. You know, a PSA 8 Sammy Vaugh is a $10,000 card, you know, if it looks good enough. A Connors, you know, $2,000 to $3,000. This is you know, big money that you're talking about. Just some good leaves. You know, and you said, I wonder how many of these are trimmed earlier, and I went through and figured about a half of them. You know, it's tough to look at, like, a George McCaffrey card, and you're like, PSA 8, but you can tell it's just trimmed on the sides. And it's just such a high tolerance for trimming, you know, the dimensions of that leaf set. It's just such a high tolerance. You know, just, you know, very, very subject to trimming. But just good to see. Somebody's breaking up a really high-end set of leaves, PSA 7s and 8s. There's a couple PSA 9s in there. I forget which one, but I just sat and looked at that card. I'm like, God, that is a beautiful card, just centered, the colors, the corners. I'm like, that's a deserving PSA 9. It's just.
Let me put you on the spot here. What do you think this set going into the market, the way it's entering the market, what do you think it's going to do for the 48 leaf collector, 48 leaf PSA collector, 48 leaf trimmer? What impact does this set have in the market, in your opinion?
Boy, well, I mean, who was it that just sold a trimmed Nagurski, and it was, or an authentic Nagurski, whatever, and it looked, it, you know, it was like this came back trimmed, and it was such a good looking card. And I think it was REA, wasn't it? Yeah, I think it was the last REA.
Yeah, I think it was REA.
Sold for $3,500, and the comment back and forth on our, you know, on our, you know, social media was, I wonder who, you know, I wonder what card doctor in Pennsylvania bought that, and when we're going to see that again in a numbered holder. So I mean, this is the same. I mean, I would imagine most, if it's a PSA 7 or 8. Imagine you have some people looking at the sevens going, can I get that into an eight? And I don't know. It's kind of weird. If you're an educated buyer and you look at some of these high-end cards and you look at it like I do, we're like, that's trimmed. I refuse to have that in my collection. I won't even bid on it. You know, all previous bets are out the window. If you just straight look at VCP or any kind of history and you go, oh, a PSA Choo Choo Justice, you know, should go for, you know, $1,500, and you bid on
it,
you know, independent of it being trimmed or not. If you're not educated and you're buying the flip, then, you know, then you can just straight sum the set. But if a third of the 48 leaf collectors are educated enough to know trimmed versus not trimmed and they don't bid in it, then that's a big swath of the market that's out, you know?
Right. All right, moving along. We got some recent results from the BST auction. Two
yes,
in particular basically almost gave me a stroke, and that was the 62 and 63 Fleer graded sets. You happen to know off the top of your head how much they went for? It was an incredible figure on both of them.
I do.
I don't have...
Yeah, the
don't have them in front
the 62
of me right
Fleer
now.
Set went for 26 and change, and the 63 went for 27 and change, both including buyer's premium. So, the number one set, by far in both of those categories, meticulously, you know, collected over the last, you know, 10, 15 years by a hobby friend. So, it's kind of fun to see those go out into the. Go out into the collecting world, you know?
And again, it shows to me the strength of the 1960s football card market. And
Absolutely.
So, you know, just my comment, real quick comment on collecting that set. And I distinctly remember the 62 Fleer set. Now, I'm going back to the 1980s when I finished that set. In fact, I looked at my notes today. I finished that set back in 1989. I had a heck of a time trying to find any commons of that set. That's the 62 the 62 Fleer set. But I eventually hit upon a guy, believe it or not, locally, who had half the set. And he said, I have no idea where I got them from. I had them. I found them. Therefore, I'm trying to sell them. He sold them to me. I mixed integrated them into my regular collection that I was putting together, and they were in relatively nice shape, so they would grade probably 7 and 8s. There's a few 9s in there, but I'm not going to get them graded. But I just found it very fascinating that you fast forward 20 years later, the amount of 62s that came in the market, 63s, and 60 and 61s also, FLIR, really, you know, came into being. So now it's a very respected set as compared to what it was back in the 80s. You know what I mean? But those prices were just beyond comprehension for me. Beyond comprehension.
Yeah, good for them.
I couldn't fathom.
Yeah, they kind of went at the top of what the range was for most people, what most people thought they'd go for. Also, some very closely held sets that went, the 1946 Sears, you know, Cleveland Brown set that we talked about in a previous Gridiron Grip podcast, sold. That went well. It's nice to see a very odd local set going that strong. Good collector, good friend of mine picked that up. You know, there was a 1926 Spalding Red Grange promotional card in that auction that sold. Went very high, a very rare card, and the price, the price was indicative of that. Rogers Pete, there was all four of the 1929 Rogers Pete's cards that sold. Not very often you see all four of those together. The Red Grange, 29 Rogers Pete Red Grange and Ken Strong, very, very rare cards. I think two or three known to exist. So when those come, up for sale, there's obviously usually some fireworks. And the final result showed that.
Exactly. So it's go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the Grange went for, near $8,000 or $9,000, and the Strong went for $5,000. So, PSA 2. So it just goes to show you rare cards, rare football cards, demand strong prices. It doesn't matter what the grade is. It's rare, and you just don't see them very often.
Exactly. And again, it also shows, and it finally gives some respect to how tough those cards are to find. They're not the type of cards that you're going to, you're going to go to your local, I'm going to go to my local show here in Connecticut, and out of the blue, a dealer is going to be set up, with all pre-World War II football items. It's just not going to happen,
Yeah.
And again, how many nationals
you don't find
that? How many nationals have we been at? We've never, what we see, one or two at the most, if that.
Yep.
It's amazing.
Yeah, you don't find these on eBay with a buy it now. It's kind of funny, a decade ago, my wife wanted to buy me for my 40th birthday, my wife wanted to buy me a special football card. So I told her, I want a PSA 7 or an 8 Bronco Nagurski. And I've set the bar high. Like a month later, she comes back, she goes, can't find that card. I can't find it. I'm like, there's rare, and then there's rare. And there's cards. If somebody came out and said, I want to put together, all four cards of the 1929 Rogers Pete football, it's you don't just do that in a weekend. That takes a while. They're not out there. Same with Spalding. Same with a lot of the Chickle cards. It's just, you can want it, but try and find it, That's what I like about football.
I find it fascinating. Over the last 20 years, I've had the pleasure to see a lot of different things that I never thought in my lifetime I was going to see in the hobby as far as cards were concerned, and actually physically see them in person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's been nice. It's stuff I've read about in the 1980s, was kind of skeptical that they even existed, but figuring there were like one or two of these somewhere, somehow, somebody had them because they were, noted. And then as time
went
on, and the Roger Peets, Chickles were not common in any way, shape, or form in the early 80s, especially the football one.
Oh, wow.
They were really brutal to find. I mean, I had like one Chickle that I had as a type card for probably, a good 7-8 years. So then the explosion came in 89, and then all of a sudden a lot of stuff came to the market. So it's amazing to see. All right, we're going to move along because our special guest is here. It's at this time I'd like to welcome our special guest. He was featured in our current issue of Gridiron Greats magazine as our super collector. He has an incredible, amazing collection of signed photos, helmets, and other football items, including an incredibly unique piece signed by Bear Bryant. I'd like to welcome to our show Mr. Gordon McIntyre. Gordon, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. It's a pleasure.
I got
good
a lot of
here.
great feedback from readers on the magazine of your collection, and I'm going to immediately go into our initial question here. How did you become a fan of football, and how did you start collecting football items?
Well, as a child, especially when I was in elementary school, my dad and I would live for the weekends. You'd only get one, maybe two college games on Saturday on our black and white television. And then the same on Sunday, you would get an NFL game and an AFL game. And that's how he and I would spend most of our time watching the games. And during that time, Birmingham was trying in the worst way to get an expansion team. This is in the mid-60s to the late 60s, either AFL or NFL. So we always had preseason games at Legion Field, maybe three a summer. So my dad would always take me to those. So that's where the interest started. It was more or less a connection to my dad and the interest that he and I both had. And then he came up with the idea, well, Gordon, if you love this so much, why don't you write the front offices of the NFL teams and write the athletic departments of your favorite college teams and ask them to send you stuff. And they did.
Oh, that's so cool.
Wow.
I love stories like that.
Either.
I love stories like
they
that.
They didn't charge
a
fee for
that. Nice. But I love stories like that where it's just people, you know, just, hey, I'm going to write them, you know, and people would get letters back from players or sign stuff. And it's just, that's pure. It's innocent. It's the way the sport should be. I love it.
I remember running to the mailbox when I would get home from school just to see what was in there. And this went on for 4 or 5 years. So it was mostly in the late 60s when I was doing all this, but I got some great treasures, signed things. I mean, I would write Notre Dame. I would write the Michigan State, so I got Duffy Doherty stuff. I would write the Packers, so I've got a lot of that, the Bears, on and on and on. Especially Auburn, just because I'm an Auburn guy, so I've got a lot of old Auburn, Pat Sullivan and Coach Shug Jordan signed 8x10 black and whites, which are priceless to me. Personally, to me, they're worth, you know, they're worth everything.
That's amazing. And you know, let's put this in perspective. Today, a lot of athletes want to sell their signature. I have the golden rule. I will not pay for anybody's signature. I have a lot of signed pieces that are signed to Bob so that the player understands I'm not going to resell this. This is for my personal collection. And it's mostly older players.
Right.
It's very few newer players. Probably the newest signatures I have are from the 80s when I was off-selling Atlanta. Believe it or not, I used to sell to the Falcons their common cards from the 80s. And they would send me guys would pull out their card and then they would mail it to me and they would sign them all to Bob because they thought it was amazing that I was selling them their cards and they didn't realize how many cards I had. You know what I mean? Especially when the expansion occurred. So that's a great story. That really is.
The Falcons,
so great to hear.
The Falcons, oddly enough, the Falcons are one of the teams that I would write. And I have 8x10 black and whites of Norm Van Brocklin, coach, Claude Humphrey, a couple of others that I can't recall right now, but this is all from the late 60s, maybe into 1970. But I've got some Falcons things. I sure do.
Wow. That's great.
You know,
that's great.
You know, Gordon, one thing I always notice in common with the super collector theme is they always have some sort of Green Bay Packer item, which catches the captain's eye. So
I know.
It's kind of funny. You turn to your super collector page, and the first thing looking at you on the opposite page is Bart Starr under center. And I always shake my head. I'm like, no wonder Bob found you and made you the super collector. You're a Green Bay Packer fan.
You know, Bart Starr lives in Birmingham, which is where I am. And I've seen him at the movie theater. He's talked to my children, that sort of thing. But I got the Bear Bryant picture later in life. But I've got black and whites that I got in the 60s of Packers signed, Willie Davis, Herb Adderley, Zeke Rutkowski. I mean, I got them when I was in the fifth grade.
Zeke Bratkowski, there's a name I know.
He's
in the Zeke is the hardest card in 1957. Yep, exactly. Yep, everybody knows that story. But speaking of Bear Bryant, you know, I loved your explanation of how you got that. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your Bear Bryant piece.
Complete coincidence. My dad would take me to preseason games in one summer. It was in 1967, so I was 11 years old, okay? The Jets were playing the Chiefs. Namath was, I believe, in his second year, possibly first. I remember the white shoes. I do remember that. Well, we're on a 50-yard line halfway up, and the whole row of seats in front of me, no one was sitting there. We're talking, you know, 15, 20 seats. So halfway through the first quarter, here comes this, what I would call an entourage, walking up Legion Field steps to, and we're thinking, well, they're going to sit right here in front of me. And they did. And it was Bear Bryant sat directly in front of me, no telling who was with him. Probably his assistant coaches, other people that had coached Joe, his wife, you know, the whole families were there together, but Bear was right in front of me. Of course, my dad gave me that look like, can you believe this? Me being 11, I didn't have a pen on me, but luckily my dad did, and I just tapped Coach Bryant on the shoulder to please sign the program. And I know you've got the program in the issue this quarter. I've got it protected, and it's a real special game program. He signed Paul Bryant. No Bear, none of that stuff, just Paul Bryant. Simple as that. But it's special, definitely.
I love the story where you get that in person, where those kind of things happen in person. It's not, you didn't buy this on eBay. You didn't meet a collector somewhere to buy it. This is you as a kid in person getting this. That is such a special piece of memorabilia.
Right.
Absolutely.
You don't ever forget it. Don't forget it. You just don't forget it ever.
I'm just curious.
That makes football fans forever.
Did Bryant start signing any of his pieces, Bear Bryant, in his later years? Because I got conflicting stories on that. I don't know if you know anything about that, Gordon.
I might know a little, but I really haven't studied that. But the place where I had worked for years and years and years, the owners of a company that I work with, they all went to school in Alabama. And they have in my office in the hallway, I guess the wall of pictures in the main hallway of my office, they have a signed Paul Bryant picture that they got in the 60s, and it does say Bear. He did sign Bear. He didn't on that program, but he did on that 8x10 they've got.
I think he started signing a lot of stuff, Bear Bryant, down later in his, or at toward the end of his coaching career. I'm not exactly sure about that, but I was just curious about that because, like I said, I've gotten several conflicting stories about that over the years, and not knowing enough about his signature, so on and so forth, I can't really speculate a guess other than as he became more known as Bear Bryant, he would sign things more Bear Bryant at the same time. So that's great. That's an incredible story.
Where'd that nickname come from?
Where did the name Bear come from?
Yeah.
Pardon me, I actually never knew that.
Yeah. Yeah, where'd the nickname come from? I actually don't know that. Okay.
Well, when he was a teenager, there was an old story that he when he lived in Arkansas, that he wrestled a bear. And the bear was a very, very small bear, thank goodness. But that's the story that's always been told, that he wrestled the bear.
And so infamously became Bear Bryant from that, and the legend grew from that over the years.
Right.
Gordon, sure glad he wasn't a pig farmer.
Similar story with Bo Jackson, who's also from Birmingham. Bo got his nickname because his mom pronounced boar, B-O-A-R, as Bo, like you're a wild boar, but she called him a wild Bo, and it came out that way, and it stuck. So he's Vincent Bo Jackson.
I actually didn't know that either.
Yes.
Wow.
Oh, you didn't know that, Joe? Yeah, that's the boar, B-O-A-R. So they shortened it to Bo. Bo Jackson. Yep.
We got to be thankful for these southern drawls, you know, creating nicknames all the world over.
Yeah, we do have that.
Gordon, your Pennant collection is beyond comparison, and seeing the pictures that you sent us on the Pennant. Tell us about it, and do you have a favorite one of all the ones that you have?
Yes. Most all of the pennants came from the preseason games that I attended. I've got some old Baltimore Colts and New Orleans Saints, the Chiefs. I've got all of those, and that's where most of that circular pennant display I have came from. But some of them later in the 60s, I got by mail order. I would grass cutting money, if you will. I would send off for one at a time. And they'd mail it back. So that became part of the collection. But the early ones are the most special ones. And they're probably my most special thing that I have in my downstairs area, the pennants, NFL and college pennants from the 50s and 60s. My favorite pennant, you asked me, my favorite NFL pennant, oddly enough, is the Atlanta Falcons, because it came from 1966, which was their first year as an expansion team. They played a preseason game here, which I attended, and that's the first year of an Atlanta Falcon team, and I got their pennant. And all I can remember about that game was my dad talking about how great Tommy Nobis was. He was their first draft pick. That pennant is real special to me, and it will probably end up in the hands when I move on. I've got two daughters, both married. One of my daughters' husbands is from Atlanta originally and is a huge Falcon fan, so I've already told Taylor he can have it down the road.
And what's nice about your pennant collection, especially the older ones, they're all what are considered to be felt pennants. And for people who don't or collectors who don't realize, the old pennants were made out of a felt type of fabric material. And then there was a screen printing process that got the lettering on the felt pennants. And they were manufactured. They weren't manufactured in bulk as they are today with a more synthetic artificial fabric, which is, you can feel the difference between a felt pennant and a non-felt pennant. And the felt pennants, to me, if they are preserved well, will last forever. And the biggest thing a lot of collectors don't realize, they will, you know, if exposed to sunlight or, you know, direct light, they can fade over the years at the same time. So it's very important not
smokers.
To, you know, put them in the sunlight or put them in direct lighting. And that's why I like the way you got them displayed in the circular fashion.
Well,
to me, it was always cool.
I've got them. I have those in clear poly covers. All the pennants are in covers, and all the lighting downstairs is LED. I try to take care of my stuff.
Yeah, some nice blasts from the past names here. The Oakland Raiders, the San Diego Chargers. You know, just it's tough. I mean, it's tough to look at that. You kind of shake your head. The Los Angeles Rams came and went. Went and came, I guess, is the better way to put it.
Right.
You know, I hate saying I even look at the Cleveland Browns one you have and go, man, those became the Ravens and then the new Browns. I mean, I don't even think of it the same.
I love the Browns. So simple. I love it.
Yeah. You're missing a Seattle Seahawk one in there, but I know that was before you were collecting before they came out.
Yeah, they came later. They did come later. Yes.
I'll give you a pass on that one, Gordon. I always love these super collector episode, because it's just, as you read about what someone focuses on, what they collect, it's just, it's amazing. I love it. I know it's probably hard to pinpoint three things, especially with your Bear Bryant program, you know, and just the memory that's associated with that. But, you know, if you had to pick three things that are your favorite, that are your babies, what would it be?
Okay, well, I've asked myself the question before, what if the house caught on fire? After I got my wife and dogs out, what would I try to save?
Exactly.
And really, it's the old pennants. The old pennants first, because they're irreplaceable. I've got a lot of college pennants, too, that are from the 50s and 60s. They're the most special things to me. And then after that, the black and white pictures from the 60s. I've got a bunch of Auburn footballs, maybe 30 of them, all signed, you know, Cam Newton, Bo Jackson, all that. And I've got a lot of Auburn mini helmets signed, about 40 of them. And I would be grabbing those first, I think, things that are autographed. I've got a lot of college and NFL yearbooks. I know Bob loves that. I have drawerfuls of them going back to the 60s. I would buy those every year and keep them. That's another thing that got me interested in the first place. When I was a child, I would buy the yearbooks, and I would practically memorize rosters and where players, pro players came from, what college they were from, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That got me really interested.
Yeah, that's an advanced collector. When I you know, back in the mid-90s, I had a friend of mine who would watch a pro football game with me. He'd be like, yeah, that guy's from, you know, USC, or that guy's from – it always stunned me. You know, I mean, I knew where a lot of my players, you know, my favorite team came from. You know, Jim Zorn went to Cal Poly, you know, Oklahoma. But I didn't really memorize it. And then I really started watching college ball around the late 90s and really started understanding. I remember seeing Corey Dillon, a running back at Washington, come to U of O and just, you know, rack 250 yards on the Ducks and destroy them. I'm like, wow, that guy's pretty good. You know?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And again, before the 24/7 media that we're inundated with today, and the internet, where you just type in something. Back then in the 60s, you know, the media guide, the program, the Street and Smiths were all invaluable information for anybody who followed the game. Number one, or number two, in the days when newspapers actually covered sports, you've got more statistical information, so on and so forth. You know, the one thing I really miss in the paper, even though some papers have very limited, is the actual game score. You know, quarter by quarter, what actually happened, and then all the statistics. You know, and again, you go back to the 60s, you know, in the Sunday paper, you probably had 200, 250 games listed of the stats.
Yeah.
And on a Monday morning, you always had the NFL and the AFL stats. And that's what I grew up with. And you know, again, pouring over that information, you know, always reminds me of, you know, my start, you know, following statistics and understanding the game more thoroughly just by reading what was being written about it. And today, to me, that's pretty much lost, you know. And again, you know, you got USA Weekly, Sports Weekly, which is about the only newspaper out there that actually, you know, does put a little more advanced stats for football. Your local paper really has nothing in it, you know.
No, it doesn't. And I miss the days. I miss the days of the papers being thrown in the front yard and just couldn't wait to get into the sports page and read all the box score and the stats. Yeah.
Yep. Totally.
I mean, I still remember on a Sunday morning, you know, the Sunday paper came, we'd go to church, or we'd pick up the paper at the drugstore on the way home, and then I got the sports section to myself, and I'd be studying it while I'm watching the NFL or the AFL game on TV. It was the coolest thing around. And I still remember, I saved a lot of sports sections, although I don't have them anymore. I sold them off over the years. But I just thought, this information is phenomenal, you know. But, again, that's really lost today.
It is.
No, I totally agree. Probably about a week ago, I was like, I wonder what the NFL standings are right now. I had no idea the Chiefs were that good. And I had to, you know, it's not in the sports section. I had to type in and go to NFL.com just to get the NFL standings by division. you know, to look it up.
Yep.
You're right. Whereas in the Sunday paper, I used to see it every week and track it. And yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Right. You have to dig for it now.
And again,
I
give credit to my little local paper here in town. They do a nice job reporting high school football. So, you know, I know what the high schools locally are doing. I do recognize some names from, kids that I knew from years ago, and now their kids are playing type of situation. And but again, it's almost like a lost history there of the game, pretty much from 2000 up, and it's sad to say the least. So.
Yes, it's different now.
Trust me, your newspaper publisher knows the captain, the ambassador of football's out there. Wallingford, Connecticut, you know, the mecca of football. They know.
Right.
They know. So,
Gordon,
right down, the
any...
from, right down the street from Bristol.
Gordon, you have any interesting collecting stories or experiences you'd like to share with our audience?
Yeah. I guess starting... just a few years ago, I got this this idea to have a Bo Jackson wall and a Cam Newton wall in my downstairs, and I have both. It's not a whole lot of different things, but enough. A lot of pictures of Bo Jackson, both at Auburn and the Kansas City Royals and the Oakland Raiders and the White Sox. I've got him on the wall. All of Sports Illustrated, for instance, that he's been on the cover, were there. Along with posters and famous iconic posters, Nike posters, him with the shoulder pads posters, that sort of thing. And I have another wall with Cam Newton, another Heisman winner for my team, with all his Sports Illustrateds and his covers. And, you know, for Auburn, but for Carolina. So I've got signed footballs from both, signed helmets, that sort of thing. Auburn football programs that they have both signed are real special to me. So I've got a small area downstairs, and that's my most recent story, I guess you could say, is I've gotten into those two players and getting some of their memorabilia.
And
there's
a lot of stuff of Auburn out there, which is neat because it's a classic football college, and the fans of Auburn are just literally everywhere. My wife, Brenda's old boss, graduated from Auburn, and I met him the first time, and we had a common thread for football. I will shout out, he's a longtime subscriber now to Gridiron Greeks magazine after he found out we publish it, and he's given me a couple good leads on Auburn collectors and the like, so it's pretty neat. On my bucket list, I'm trying to get down there for a game with him. So we're still trying to plan it. Probably next year we're going to get down and spend the weekend down there and take it in.
Right. It's great. Great fun.
Gordon, I'm not sure if you picked it up. I'm in Portland, Oregon. And my wife went to U of O, you know, Go Ducks. And I'm a season ticket holder to the Ducks. I went to the BCS championship game in Phoenix, Auburn against the Ducks.
Yes.
Now, were you there?
No, you know, I've been to many, many games, but we didn't go. There were other things that came up, and my wife and I could not make that trip. It's just one of those things that, there were other priorities going on, so we didn't. Boy, I wish we could have, though. Wish we did.
Well, I'm wondering how you feel about the growing wave of public sentiment that Auburn should vacate that BCS championship because of Bo Jackson's, the allegations.
You mean Cam Newton?
Against Cam Newton. Cam Newton,
right.
And his father receiving money to play some Auburn.
Right.
So a lot of people on this phone call who think that Auburn should vacate that championship.
Right. Well, they'll never vacate it. Now, whether somebody else comes in and has proof of anything, then maybe they could have something to do with it. But
I'm kidding. I'm saying it's just me.
I don't think they really couldn't prove much or anything. So I don't know what to say. I don't know.
I'm just kidding, Gordon. I'm just, as a Ducks fan, watching that guy run over us, I was like, damn that guy.
Yeah.
And it was right after Reggie Bush, right after somebody found out Reggie Bush got a car or something like that. And,
yeah,
you know,
that's right.
Suddenly everybody was in the, you know, I don't know. To me, whether somebody's dad got an envelope with some money in it or whether somebody's mom got a car doesn't affect how somebody plays on the football field, you know. They got to be.
Very true.
That was a good.
Right. Very true. I have a picture of me standing with Cam Newton's dad, and he's got a Carolina Panthers shirt on. I'm standing with his dad, and I said, here, take our picture. So I've got this great picture, and then I sent the picture out to all my Auburn friends, letting them know that I was the bag man for Cam.
Wow.
Can you see the envelope with the $100 bills in his front pocket?
No, but I did have a bag over my shoulder, so it's a giveaway.
You're the cash mule for Cam's dad, I guess.
That was me. So, that's me.
Nice. Football here, you know.
Yes.
Just funny to talk about old BCS championship. Oh, sorry, Bob.
Garden, I gotta ask you a question off script because I just remember this now. I got an email from one of our readers. That electric football game that you have featured in the magazine, can you tell us a little bit about that? Was it a Tudor game?
Yes. I've read up on these electric football games. There's a great history to those. But I got that metal board when I was in the mid-60s, and I never bent it. I never hurt it. I've protected it all this time, which is amazing in itself because usually they get bent. But I have it on display downstairs, and all the players, and those were old players from the 60s, I painted them up as Auburn. And put jersey numbers on them, and the numbers I used were a famous
Auburn.
I did that myself, and it's just kind of the centerpiece of the coffee table downstairs, and it's just an important part, like everything else we discussed tonight. It's just an important part of my growing up, but they're very, very much a sentimental piece to me.
Everybody
in my neighborhood had one.
There's a big demand for those.
Everybody
older
in my
Tudor
neighborhood had an electric football game.
There's a big demand for those older Tudor electric games. So he sent me an email on it, and I kind of vaguely remember one of your emails was sent to me that you did that with the players and the like. That's pretty cool. That's nice to see.
Yes. Yes.
your wall display of mini helmets was really impressive in your gridiron great. You know, right up. I like that. So
I love it. How do you decorate a wall? Well, I had a few mini helmets, and then I Googled mini helmets and saw that these guys, different people, had walls similar to that. They had shelf after shelf after shelf of mini helmets. I said, all right, that's what I'll do. And so I have a 12-foot wide wall. And I've got the whole NFL and all the Power Five football teams there, as well as the old Birmingham off league teams, USFL, WFL, that sort of thing. But they're all there, and it covers the whole wall. So it's really turned out better than I ever expected. It's fun.
I see Pro in there too. I'm looking at it right now. Pro is on
top
your
top
shelf, and then okay.
Top two rows are in
NFL. If you don't mind. Okay. Eight times 4, 32. Okay. I was just doing the math here, making sure you had a Seahawk helmet in there somewhere.
It's
all
in
right.
there.
Just double checking anyway. just verify. Hey, a quick, you know, kind of wrap up. You know, any collecting advice? I mean, you're obviously a very advanced collector. You've been doing this a while. You know, other than, you know, being in the right place at the right time when Bear Bryant sits down in front of you when you're 11, you have any collecting advice that you can give to our audience?
I think that if you start as a kid, you have to hold on to it. You just have to. Even if you do what I did, I became disinterested in all the things that I had. I stuffed it all in drawers. because other things took precedence just growing up and just doing adult things. And then, you know, when you get to a certain age, it's like, man, I've got all this stuff from when I was a kid, and it's real important to me now, and I got it all out. So if you – I guess the only advice I would have is if you start as a kid, hopefully – you get encouragement from your parents or maybe other friends. Hey, you need to hold on to that. Hey, that's really interesting, an interesting item. You need to don't throw that away. And my dad was that way, so I did hold on to it. And although I put it in drawers for such a long time, when I got them out, when I got everything back out, I realized, gosh, you've really got something here. So, I've tried to encourage I've got two daughters, okay? I've tried to encourage them the same thing, to do the same thing. I have my oldest daughter is 32. She was a high school All-American in soccer, and she was a state player of the year and played in college, all that. And she has all this soccer stuff, and she's not interested in it in the least. And she's 32 years old now.
Wow.
But I've got it all stored away for her because I've told her, Ann, you're going to love it when you have kids and get a little older. And it's right here in these boxes, and I have probably 10 boxes. She met all the we took her to Women's World Cup. So the Mia Hamm stuff, this is in 99. She was in middle school. She got autographs from all those ladies playing on the World Cup team. It doesn't mean much to her now, but I guarantee it will down the road.
Wow.
A lot of us collectors follow that same vein. We collected as a kid. When we discovered girls, we stopped collecting. And then somewhere around our mid to late 20s, something sparks us. So that covers about 90% of us collectors.
That's right. Yep. I'm encouraging my girls to do the same thing. So I'm holding on to their stuff for them since they're not interested, but they'll change their minds.
No, you're doing great. About the only difference between us collectors is, did your mom throw your stuff out when you went away to college or whatever, or did she save it? So.
There's one thing that didn't survive, and it just – I get upset thinking about it, but I had a bunch of Topps Tall Boys from 65-66, the AFL, mostly AFL. There was a 5 and dime store 3 or 4 blocks from my house, and I would walk down there with my change and buy another pack and another pack. I had all of them. I had the Joe Namath rookie. I had all of them, and I had them in a shoebox. Where the shoebox went, I'll never know.
You and the captain need to get together and go bowling. You both have a very similar childhood buying tall boys.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Well, Brian, we're almost out of – go ahead. Go ahead.
We're almost out of time.
Any final thoughts that you have on anything would you like to share?
No, I think we've just about hit all the highlights, haven't we? But I really enjoyed the conversation. It's a big deal to me, and it's a special part of my life. So to be able to come in and talk to guys that actually have that in common with me and know a lot more about it than I do, it's just been a real pleasure speaking to you two.
Well, you got an amazing collection, and I really thank you for sharing it with our audience and sharing it with our readers. And I got some really nice compliments from readers on it and from my writers, and it's really cool, really cool. It was like a step back in time for me, back in the '60s when the game was different and the players were different, and the memorabilia was a lot different than it is today.
Sure,
Gordon, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, thank you,
Jeff. Thank you, sir.
Gordon McIntyre, super collector in the recent fall issue of Gridiron Greats magazine. Joe, we're winding time down. We're going to go into an extended 2-minute warning here, wrap up. What do you think we learned on tonight's show?
For an Auburn fan, what a nice guy. You know, it's kind of like when we bump into Pittsburgh Steelers fans. I mean, just normally you think, okay, this guy's not going to be very intelligent because he's a Steelers fan. But, you know, I'm always pleasantly surprised. Yeah, that's for you, Spano, by the way. Just always pleasantly surprised. Just nice guy. I just like it. And it's always fun. I've said it 100 times. I've got the best seat in the house here. I had no idea I never thought about it. I knew Bo Jackson's name was Vincent. but I just everybody's got a nickname, and I just figured it came from somewhere. But think about the advertising. If his mom doesn't have a thick Southern drawl, where boar becomes you're like a wild beau. I mean, just beau knows. I know what beau don't know. You know, just think about all the advertising that missed out. That doesn't rhyme with Vincent.
And it's amazing with Bo Jackson, what an amazing athlete and what a short career. I mean, really, if you really think about it, it's kind of sad in a way, but it is what it is, and that's it. You know, there's not much can be done about it. And then Bear Bryant with the wrestling of the bear, that's a classic story of his nickname. And again, like I said, it probably grew and grew and grew as he got as he became more and more famous. So therefore, he was he was able to do that and create that legend of his name.
Yeah. Well,
and again,
you wonder with him signing stuff, Paul Bryant. You wonder if he embraced that nickname later on in life. You know.
Right.
Who knows?
Right. And the one nice part about that piece, and to me, I'm still fascinated by that signature of Paul Bryant only. On that program, it's just so unique to me, and I just can't get over it. And I've looked at it numerous times. When you originally sent me the picture of it, I said, "Wow, I have never seen something like this before. I've seen only Paul Bear Bryant or Bear Bryant signatures. I've never seen just a Paul Bryant signature, and that's just a very, very cool to see. So really interesting, and I'm very happy." Years ago, Brenda and I made the decision to do the super collector section because we've had some incredible super collectors over the years and we featured. And again, it doesn't have to be the most expensive collection. It doesn't have to be the rarest collection. It's just something that is generally collected and generally enjoyed by the collector. And I think that's something that is really, really, I feel, part of the hobby, something that's so overlooked today. It's just really needs to be told, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you should be a super collector in an episode, Captain. You should be a super collector.
I talk about your collection
all the time.
Well, I got super memories more so than a super collection. I think, although I may have some pieces that might be different, I have a lot of not incredibly rare nor incredibly different, but at the same time, I got a lot of memories of what I collected over the years, and I think that's what it's all about.
How do you find the super collectors? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. How do you find the super collectors episode?
I find a lot of them at shows that I go to, more so the national and some of the bigger shows. I find them from people who actually just email me out of the blue and say, I've been reading your magazine. I'd like to know if my collection could be featured. I don't know if it's good enough or whatever. And it's the constant statement I get from collectors is, I don't know if my collection is good enough. And everybody's collection is good enough, as far as I'm concerned. And we've featured a lot of people over the years who have, in my opinion, incredible collections. And again, they're not the most rare, they're not the most expensive, but they're still amazing collections to look at and to view. So I think that's part of the lore of the attraction to the piece in the magazine. But getting back to your original question, I get a lot of people that contact me on it, and I end up inevitably finding people at shows or by mail or email or phone. I've had people call me on the phone and talk about it. So it's very interesting, to say the least. All right, we're down to about 45 seconds. Any final thoughts, Joe, before we go?
Just classy. I love this podcast. I love doing this with you. I just not many times do people get a chance to just kind of sit around and talk football with a friend of theirs. You know, it's kind of fun.
It's fun. All right, we're almost out of time. Again, we've been sponsored in part by MSB Sports Cards. Check out their website, MSBSportsCards.com.
and by BST Auctions. Check out their website, bstauctions.com. Joe, thanks for being on. We'll be on with the second show this month toward the end of the month, and be on the lookout for it. Thanks for listening.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.